Welcome to the Retired Podcast. I'm Riley.
And I'm Noah.
We're former professional athletes turned to parents and business owners.
We created this podcast to talk about sports, life, and everything in between.
Thanks for joining us. Let's get to it.
We're back with another episode of the Retired Podcast, brought to you by Yate Energy.
There wasn't.
I got nothing to say, but it's great.
Swallow loud.
That was actually not, that wasn't super loud.
Noah is notorious for loud swallowing.
I'm a loud swallower. It's not my greatest trait, I'll admit that. But I've done my best to control it. I just can't. There's nothing I can do about it. It's just the way God made me.
Anyways. Today's episode, we are going to talk about slumpage. Everyone's favorite S word.
Slumps.
Slumps.
Super fun.
Slumpy wumpies.
We've all done it. We're not proud to say it.
All been there.
But it's part of the game. What are you going to do?
I don't know. So first, let's talk about defensive slumps.
Okay. The boring one.
The boring one?
Yeah, it's just, I mean, I guess for infielders, I would call it the yips over a slump. I feel like slump is definitely batting related, but well,
depends.
Yeah, yips. I've had some yips defensively.
You know, we've seen the yips.
We have?
You know what play I'm thinking of immediately when I think of your yips?
Let's hear it.
Okay, so just for reference, Noah's a lefty, so he's limited on positions he can play. Okay.
Yep, you nailed it.
Especially in the infield, so first base is usually where he played in college, if he played infield.
What's the yip?
The yip is runner at first, ground ball hit to you, the shortstop's worst nightmare coming across the bag, trying to turn two, you just spike it.
That throw got me
right
every time.
Into the dirt.
It's either
every time.
Spike or sail.
Yeah.
I have hit the runner a few times. And it's really not that hard. You know, create a lane, hit your guy in the chest.
Yeah. I mean, you're probably up a little bit anyways because you're in
you're already coverage. You already have the inside lane. And the shortstop knows that. And so he's on the inner half of the bag. Something about that runner being there.
There's nothing worse as a shortstop. You're going full speed
at
first base. And the throw is like 3 feet that way. And you have to like lay out for it.
Sorry.
Just the worst ever.
I'm impressed you knew that because, yeah, that one got me every time. And that's why I had a very short lifespan as a first baseman in college. But you know what it is? It's not that the runner's there. Like, I can play catch. It's the type of throw that is required on that ball. I feel like it takes finesse. Like, it's not a dart throw, but it's also not, like, let it eat.
Really?
Well, it should have been. That was the problem, was, like, it should have been. Just, like,
guide
use
it.
Your body and throw the ball.
Oh, okay.
I would always try
that
to aim it.
That makes more sense.
And because I would try to aim it, I would throw it right at the runner's feet. Or sail it. Or left or right. Or on the other side, when my shortstop's on the inside, I'd throw it across everybody. And it's just, that throw, man, got in my head. I hated it.
What position gets the yips most often?
Hot take. Just because I've seen it. I would definitely say like an infielder trying to field, like fielding yips, but hot take is catchers trying to throw the ball back to the pitcher.
Really? I was thinking like pitcher yips.
I've seen some bad yips.
You ever seen a pitcher try to throw a finesse style throw?
Yes. Oh, that's not the yips.
Horrible.
That's just pitchers in general trying to field a ball and throw it to first. I wouldn't even call that the yips, but like that is what I would relate to me trying to throw the ball from first to second on a double play ball. Is a pitcher fielding a ball and trying to throw it first. It's like kind of a finesse throw, but not really. You could get into it a little bit.
It really should probably be an underhand toss or like as hard as you can throw.
It depends. It's just like if you have to aim it, you could get yippy real quick. I think there's a guy I played against in college. I'm pretty sure he follows me.
Are you going to call somebody out?
No.
You going to start some beef?
He makes fun of himself for it. Actually, he posted the other day making fun of himself for it. It was actually really funny. But yeah, he was a catcher and he had the yips and like actually went viral for it, to where like he had to change the way he threw the ball back to the pitcher, where he was like, like it was bad. It was
my
bad.
Goodness.
Yeah, but he got through it.
He was a stud. You can have fielding yips too, though.
But it was funny because, like, he was a stud.
Right.
But it can happen to anybody. Right. Like, that's just how mental it is to, like, the most elementary thing of playing catch can just become this mental nightmare.
Have you ever, it's kind of like, this is what I equate it to. If you're not somebody who's familiar with playing baseball or softball, you know when you are walking, like, on the sidewalk and you try to focus on walking normal and all of a sudden walking normal just feels very difficult and, like, you don't feel normal anymore at all?
Yeah.
That's kind of what throwing gets like sometimes.
Yeah. It's like something we literally do all the time before every single baseball or softball thing ever. And when you're playing catch, you can hit your teammate in the chest 20 times in a row. But when it's a certain play,
or you think about it too much,
or you think about it, that's what it is. When you think about it, it's just like, what am I even doing? I forgot how to play baseball.
Yep.
Sick.
Sweet.
What about you? What's your biggest yippee on defense moment?
I think most of my errors on defense were throwing errors. I didn't really make a lot of, like, receiving errors.
Yeah, your hands were sick.
But I think you can get the yips on defense, like, fielding too.
For sure.
I think for most people, it's like fear of the ball. And I can remember I was in 16U, but I was playing up with our 18U team because I think their shortstop was sick. Maybe we couldn't make the tournament. We were in this really big tournament in Colorado.
Slight flex.
If you are a softball player, you know what the Colorado tournament is. It's one of those staples. The dirt is so hard. We were playing the team called the Sorcerers, based in California. And they're really good.
You're a wizard.
And my left side infielders will know this. When there is hard dirt and you get a really hard topspun two hopper, if you don't go attack the hop, it's going to eat you alive. And I guess I just hadn't experienced that. Maybe I was just nervous playing up on the 18U team. I don't know. But I got three of the same exact ground ball in a row, and all three of them hit me in the chin. All three of them. What? So after three hits, it was bases loaded.
Hold on. How are you not bleeding at this point?
I mean, I probably was. I think I actually did have some, like
you hit the chin three times in a row?
Three. I mean, some of it was, like, off the chest and then the chin. One was, like, a direct blow to the chin.
I mean, good on you to stay in after the second chin shot, you know?
I had no choice. My coach wasn't going to pull me.
I'm going to do this again.
Let's just run off the field.
Let's run that back. One more chin shot.
So after three, and, like, this is probably a pitcher's worst nightmare. Three straight ground balls. Should have been three straight outs.
Bases were loaded. Yeah. You're welcome, pitch.
And then I was afraid of the ball, I think, for a while after that.
I could see that. Three shots.
If you don't go get it, like, and that's, I didn't learn drop steps as an infielder until pretty much college. So, like, I was like, go get it. And I tried, but.
Oh, so you did try. Like, you didn't sit back on it.
No.
You went for it.
Like, I went, like, traditional right, left field footwork.
Yeah.
But, like, I just could not gain enough ground to get the short hop. So it was a tweener every time. It was, like, one of these. And it just.
Bam.
Yeah.
That's not fun. Yeah, well, defense slumps are not fun. I can't say we can relate them to hitting slumps. I think they're two totally different things. Yeah. But, like,
way easier to get out of.
But I almost feel like on defense, it's almost sometimes more embarrassing because it's just defense should be easier than hitting.
True.
Hitting is, everyone knows,
like,
it's
you're
hard.
Supposed to get out.
Right. And, like, when you're struggling and you're in a slump, like, everyone's like, ah, he's just in a slump. He'll get out of it.
Yeah.
But, like, defense is like, okay.
Become a liability at that
point. That's three in a row. Like, what are we doing? Yeah, it's like, when I'm hitting, I have eight other guys to make up for my slump.
Exactly.
But I'm on defense, it hurts more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was never fun. That, I can think of, like, all my hitting slumps besides one very tough one in pro ball. And, like, that little defensive slump that I had of not being able to make that throw was, like, harder on my mental than I think any hitting slump I ever went through.
Mm-hmm.
It's tough.
Absolutely brutal.
Yeah.
So that's it for defensive slumps.
Yeah, those aren't fun.
Let's get into some offensive slumps. Let's talk on a more serious note first.
Ooh, serious.
I want you to tell me, go, like, transition to your hitting coach mentality here. Let's actually give the people some good information.
Put me on the spot.
What do you think causes offensive slumps?
I mean, obviously there's a ton of answers to that, and it depends who the hitter is. But it's always something mental, I think, for the most part. Now, like, yes, the start of it could be something physical that you're doing wrong. There can always be a swing thing, but, like, I've seen guys with bad swings, myself included, like, get out of a slump with not even a good swing. But it's when you allow a couple bad swings or bad at bats to start to pile up on you mentally, and you start thinking, oh my God, I'm broke. Mm-hmm. What am I doing? I forgot how to hit. And then you just go on that roller coaster of emotion mentally to where you start losing confidence, and it's just this snowball effect until you're like, there's a hole in my bat. I couldn't hit water if I fell out of a boat. And then you start talking to yourself like that, and then you believe it, and then it's like, wow, what just happened? I feel like that's just the snowball effect of slumps and hitting and confidence loss. It's really easy because hitting's a hard thing to do.
So you think it's based in confidence loss?
Yeah. I mean, I think that guys who don't get too high or too low can typically, like, even kill players, don't stay low for long. And I think that on a more serious note, I think the biggest issue behind slumps and why they happen is because when you're going through them, you start to center the focus on yourself, what you're doing. And I think that for me, and we'll get into it, but the best way that I ever kind of got out of slumps was to, like, shift my focus to the team, because usually when I was slumping, I was thinking me.
Yeah.
You know, more focused on what I was doing. And so I usually would have to shift my focus back to, okay, just help the team right here. Like, find a way, even if it's a freaking nubber and I move a runner over. Yeah. Like, I can take that as a small victory.
A quab.
And yeah, like, start stacking up quabs, and eventually, like, I can go back into damage mentality. But yeah, I know for me personally, slumps were from getting a little bit, like, selfish mentally, focusing on me, and then over-focusing on me once the struggle started, to where it was just me. And it made things worse. Because remember, we're playing a team sport here. Even though it's the most individual feeling team sport in the world, that's usually where slumps came from for me. Definitely mental.
That's pretty good.
Thanks. What about you, Coach? What's your advice?
Waiting for you to ask.
What's your advice to... What was the question?
Where do slumps come from? Why do you get into a slump?
Why do you think?
So I think most of the time, unless you're kind of an average hitter who just hits, like, below 300 fairly consistently, I think slumps for above average or slightly average hitters or really great hitters come from expanding the zone. I think it's cyclical.
For sure.
I think it's, you start hitting really well, usually, you know, for whatever reason, you're just more locked in or whatever, maybe you made a swing adjustment like you were talking about. And then somewhere along the way, you get too big for your britches and you start thinking you can hit pitches, like, outside the zone, or maybe pitches that aren't, like, your best pitch to hit. So you start swinging at everything.
Yeah.
And then your contact starts to suffer, your batting average starts to drop, you start getting out more, and then all of a sudden you're in a slump. Mm-hmm. And so, and we'll talk about that here in a second, like you were saying, but I think one of the best ways to get out of a slump is to attack strikes. Oh. And, like, get really specific with, like, I'm only hitting outside pitches.
Yeah.
And if the pitcher throws me 3 inside pitches and strikes me out, like, I just have to be okay with that.
That's a great point.
Yeah.
I think that is for sure something that, like, if you're a player and you're listening to this and you're struggling right now, check your zone expansion. Mm-hmm. Where are we at? But on the flip side of that, like, not being afraid to cut the plate in half, you know, mm-hmm. or just cut your waist in half and say, I'm looking down or up or one or the other.
Because if you're going to slump, odds are you're getting out a lot anyway.
Right. So it's like,
why does it matter if you just get out in a different way?
Try something, you know? But the thing about that, and I've had a moment in my career where I did something like that, is just the commitment it takes. Because it's one thing to say, okay, I'm going to cut the plate in half and just look middle in and only swing at that.
Yeah.
And that's a whole other thing to actually do that. And like you said, be willing to take 3 on the outer half and not even take the bat off.
I mean, it has to be an educated guess, right? Like, you don't want to, if you're, all your teammates are telling you that they're throwing you inside, they're throwing righties inside, you're not going to go up there like, all right, I'm going to hit only outside pitches. That makes no sense. So it has to be educated, but definitely, yeah.
So, well, and one thing I noticed, like, on that note, is when I did do that, and this kind of ties into a slump I had in pro ball, was I was swinging at pitches that I thought were on the strike zone or on the outside corner. And I would watch video on, like, swinging at balls on the white line.
Yeah.
And that's just because guys had insane movement. Like, the ball would literally start in the middle and end up on the white line outside. And that was tough. And so I'm like, I swear I'm just swinging through it. But then I would watch video and I was like, oh, that ball was 3 balls off. And so my coaches were like, hey, cut the plate in half. You're good at inside pitches. You're not touching the outside pitch. Just stop trying and hunt middle in. And so I did that. And at first I kind of, like, tiptoed into it. I was like, okay, I'll kind of look middle in. Still swinging and missing, still chasing.
You gotta commit.
And then I finally was like, all right, I'm all in on this. If it's not inside half, I'm not going for it.
Yeah.
But I still would swing at outside pitches thinking that they were more middle. Mm-hmm. And I'd go back and watch the video and I'd be like, wait, that was on the black of the outside corner. But then I'd be hitting it. Like, I'd be smoking it. I was like, okay, so I can't. It's not that I can't hit outside pitches. It's just that I'm not swinging strikes.
Yeah.
But it took me committing to a big idea like that and being all in on it to actually see improvement. So that's a great point about, like, getting out of slumps, which we'll get into.
Yeah. I feel like we're already in it. Should we just continue?
Yeah, I mean, but to your point, like, how slumps begin. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I think it starts with something good, like you're killing
it. Yeah, you're just crushing it.
And then you just get big. And
yeah, or like, you know, when you hit front toss a lot, or I guess for baseball, like in softball, you do a lot of on the field front toss.
Yeah.
I guess in baseball, you'll probably do more overhand. Like the ball, especially in high school and college, the ball tapers off towards the end because it's slow. Like, gravity affects it. Gravity pulls it down. It tapers off. And if you're so used to hitting home runs and BP, there's a good chance that your sights have just adjusted lower on the ball, even if it's just like 2 centimeters lower on the ball.
Yeah.
When you're facing pitching in a game that's not tapering off in the end, you're going to start being more underneath it.
1,000%.
And so you start to, it's like your swing hasn't changed necessarily, but it's just the sights have changed. And sometimes you do start swinging a little bit big because you're trying to hit it over the fence. So
yeah, and if you're a player who absolutely hates or despises machine work, which I did too, that's why your coaches do it. There's less of that drop off when you're hitting off a machine. But to that point, which is, it's not like super on topic, but like, yeah, I, especially in higher levels when I was facing guys who had velo and spin rate and all that, it was like I had to think above the ball, top of the ball. Some of my best moments in my career came from when I was trying to hit a line drive off the pitcher's ankles.
Yeah.
I was like, that wasn't fun. You know, I didn't want to go into the
box. It's not glamorous.
Like, ground ball to the pitcher, but like, that's what got me doubles and homers. So it was cool. And that's actually what got me out of a slump one time, because I was in pro ball and guys all had that spin rate. And so like, they would literally throw a fastball that out of the hand. I swear, I'm like, that's at my waist. Sweet. Let's go. And I watch a video and I'm like 3 feet under it. I'm like, okay, what is happening? And so that's what I did. Back to the idea of just like making a crazy adjustment and being all in. I was like, all right, screw it. I mean,
you gotta try stuff.
Yeah. So I literally, it was like in pregame, I'm like high T chopping wood, BP. I was like, I'm living low this entire time. And then I went and had one of the better games, finally broke out of a slump. I was like, maybe I'm onto something here. And I just kept doing it and it kept working. I was like, sweet. Okay. Yeah. But what was the topic? Getting out of slumps now?
Is that kind of where we're at? Yeah, we can go into getting out of slumps.
Okay, so in your opinion, and you already kind of alluded to it, what's the best way to get out of a slump?
To not get in one.
Nice.
Just kidding. No, I feel like there's so many variables as a hitter. It's difficult to pinpoint sometimes what's actually going wrong. Like, we're talking about, you know, sometimes it's just a decision-making thing, like not swinging at strikes. But usually what I tell my hitters, and this is like my hitting coach brain again, usually tell my hitters, if we can judge our bad contact in a way that's constructive, you can really avoid lots of slumps. Because most of the time slumps are either due to bad habits, which are usually formed like off the tee or front toss, like you're talking about when you're just messing around, not really focused on something.
Yeah.
Or two, they're just, it's not recognizing patterns.
Yeah.
So I always tell my hitters, and if I went back and played, I would do this to myself too. Every time you make contact and the result of the play is not something you want, it's weak contact usually, or swing and miss, strikeout, that kind of stuff, ask yourself 3 questions. And the 3 questions are this. Question number 1, did I swing at a strike? And that was kind of my first point I was talking about.
Yeah.
There's no rule that says you have to swing at strikes, and some hitters do hit balls very well, but statistically speaking, the more strikes you swing at, the more successful you are. It's just the way that it is. And that's the most important one. Question number 2 is, was I on time? And we don't have to get into like what is timing really right now, but if you are swinging at strikes but you're habitually late or habitually early and you just don't recognize it, your results might not be like, if you're habitually late, it might not all be jam shots every single time. Like an easy pattern to recognize, it could be like a pop up to the pitcher or like hitting it, you know, to the first base side.
Good stuff is like, you could also pop up to the pitcher being early.
Exactly, which is why it's hard to diagnose.
Yeah.
So that's question number 2. The 3rd question is, did I hit the right part of the ball? You usually make hard contact if the answer to the first 2 are yes.
Yeah.
Unless you miss too far underneath or too far above. So the goal is to get all 3 of those questions to be answered yes. Yes, I was swinging at strikes. Yes, I was on time. Yes, I hit the right part of the ball. But if one of them is wrong, it gives you purpose for your next step back.
Right. And I feel like it can also help you avoid immediately trying to diagnose what's wrong with your swing.
Definitely.
Because, like, that's the thing that I used to do when I was in a slump was immediately, what's wrong with my swing? Mm-hmm. What's broken? Versus my swing could have been fine. Mm-hmm. I just was a mile early on a pitch that wasn't in the strike zone.
And a lot of hitters just, like, how many hitters do you see coming in saying, oh, I was dropping my shoulder or I was doing this? And it's like, no, bro, if you were 10 years late.
Yeah, your shoulder's not dropping.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I love that one. I get that so much where it's like, kids are popping up and they're like, yeah, my coach says I'm dipping. I'm like, you're actually flat and you're disconnected.
Exactly.
And your barrel is a mile under the ball, but your shoulders are actually the opposite of dipping. It's just, it's funny how, I guess that's another way that slumps can happen is like you see results and you don't have knowledge about your swing. Mm-hmm. And so now you're trying to fix the wrong thing.
Yeah.
And now you're,
it's you're exacerbating the problem. Things
worse, right? And so kind of on that note, like, I guess my answer to be to how to get out of a slump would be first to do what you said. I think that don't go immediately to your swing and try to diagnose everything because the swing could be fine.
Yeah.
But it's important to have a good process when you work that creates like a problem solving mechanism for you to use in games. And it's not like this big crazy equation that you got to solve after every swing, but it's like kind of like you're saying, you know, you have three steps. I like to, with my hitters on top of that, have like one to two questions you ask yourself about your actual swing. If the answer to all those things you said was yes, 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 I was on time, swung a strike, hit the right part of the ball, but I still had a miss. Okay, do we have a couple swing feels that we really rely on for your swing? You know, like, for instance, a lot of my hitters right now are working on posture. Did you feel your first move be butt back? Did you get early posture? Mm-hmm. And then the second thing could be like, I got a lot of hitters who also like to turn forward instead of work behind with their turn. And so like two questions they could ask themselves is after all the other things, you're like, okay, I swung a strike. I was on time. I hit the right part of the ball, still missed. Did I get early posture? Did I turn behind the ball? Mm-hmm. Like just a quick swing thing. That's not,
and that's
like
hitter dependent, right?
Right. And it depends specific. Who the hitter is. And it's not that for every single hitter. But like if you are somebody who can handle asking yourself things about your swing, like even mid at bat, right? I was not a big guy, like fan of that. Like when I was in the box, I didn't want to be thinking swing mechanics, but I definitely see now as a coach that like that's something I needed. I never had a process of a problem solving process. So like when I got out, usually what I would do is just get pissed off and be emotional about it and have zero space in my brain for actually like analyzing what I did wrong mechanically, if I did something wrong mechanically.
They're just stewing out there.
And then I'm just mad. And so now going into my next at bat, instead of having this like clear cut answer where I'm like, ooh, I got it. Mm-hmm. I figured out what it was by two simple questions. Now I'm not on deck feeling what I need to feel. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the adjustment is. And so now I'm going into my next at bat, like, I know something's wrong, but I don't know what it is. I'm just going to try to swing my way out of this. And so I think my whole thing for getting out of slumps is like have a process first off. And that comes from working and figuring things out about your swing and then trust your process in games.
And trust the process.
And if the result, and this is the hard one right here, if you made an adjustment and the result was still not good, trust your process. Like
that, hitting I was going to say so that. Hard. So like, I feel like whenever you have a, let's say my three-step approach, it shifts your perspective on what success is. Mm-hmm. Like I think in general as a hitter, if I say what is success to you, most hitters would say hitting a home run, whatever. Like my batting average would show my success rate.
Right.
But I feel like it's so ambiguous. Like the sport is, there's so many variables when you're hitting that you could do everything right. You could hit literally over the fence and the center fielder jumps over the fence and robs your home run. So it's like your success cannot be dependent on the results of the play necessarily. And so when you add those, so let's say I swung at a strike, but I was early. My next at bat, if I swing at a strike and then I'm late,
that's a win.
It's a win because I did what I set out to do.
But I got out. It's a win.
Mature hitters will see it and say, I'm step closer to my next.
And not only will they see it as a win, they'll be like fired up about it. They'll be like, let's freaking go. I made an adjustment. And so like on that topic of how this relates to slumping, imagine your confidence as a hitter. You know, I just went 0 for my first two and both times I was early, but that third at bat I was late as could be, you know, and I popped up to the, for me, I'm a lefty, so we'll say third baseman. It's like, but I was late. Great. That's an adjustment. And
it's
so now
it's like, executing your plan.
Now going into my fourth at bat, instead of being like, dude, I'm freaking 0 for 3. And this is what I used to do. I'm 0 for 3. I have to get a hit right here.
Yeah.
I cannot go 0 for 4. Now I'm pressing. Now I'm stressed. I have no idea what adjustment I need to make because I didn't make space in my
mind. You're
not
thinking proactively at all.
Right. And so like back to that problem solver mentality is one, you have to have knowledge of your swing and knowledge of your past results mm-hmm. to be able to formulate a solution. But then go and be realistic. Like if you solve the problem, but the result wasn't what you wanted it to be, that doesn't mean you failed.
Yeah.
And when you start to become that hitter who is stacking up small victories via adjustments, your confidence is undeniable because now it's like, okay, I'm 0 for 3, but I felt it that last at bat. Let's go.
Mm-hmm.
And then I go into at bat 4 and probably something good's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And if it didn't, if I stay on track like that long enough, success is inevitable.
Yeah.
And that right there is 1000% what I preach to my hitters is the reason we work is to have knowledge of our swing so we can have a process so that we can be problem solvers, mm-hmm. not panickers. I was a panicker.
Definitely.
At different
times. A good phrase.
And so I think that nails it. Like if you want to get out of a slump, you know, and we'll talk about the funny things that we've done mm-hmm. to get out of a slump, the most outrageous things, but like everything we just laid out, like those are the things, if you're truly struggling, start with that. Stack small victories, but first mm-hmm. you have to have knowledge about your results and your swing. And just because you're analyzing something doesn't mean you have to be over micromanaging and like so nitpicky. It's just like, just look at the basic facts of what you're seeing, take in that knowledge, and try your best to do something different.
If you are in a slump right now and you do not feel like you have any answers whatsoever, you feel totally lost, DM us some of your video.
Yeah.
And we'll take a look at it. At Riley Sarton for me.
At Noah_Vaughn11 for me on
Instagram.
We'll take
a look at it. If you have nobody in your corner to kind of help you with it, or you don't trust maybe the people that are trying to help you, we can help you out. Send us some videos. We'll do our best.
And here's the last thing I'll say on that like problem solver mentality thing. Like once you find your answer, you're like, hey, I've been early 3 times in a row.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I need to be late right here. What does that actually look like? And I think that this is the part that gets everybody.
Mm-hmm.
We all can identify a problem most likely, especially asking the simple questions you laid out. But when it's time to actually go and execute the adjustment, we're all, myself included, way too scared to go for it.
Yeah.
So if my adjustment is I need to be so late that I hit a foul ball into the third base dugout as a lefty, to actually go into the box and commit to that, I'm too worried about
that's
what
scary.
My swing's going to look like.
Yeah,
I'm like,
scary.
What if I take a bad swing? Like, what if, you know, it's like, it's not about that. You just need to feel something different.
Mm-hmm.
And the chances are is if I sacrifice one swing or one at bat to feel what I need to feel,
yeah.
I could have just changed the outcome of my next 20. But if I'm not willing to get uncomfortable trying to make an adjustment, I may be doomed for the next 20. And now my slump just gets bigger and bigger. You have to
and
be brave
you're
enough.
On the bench.
You have to be brave enough to feel a little stupid. You have to be brave enough to try something uncomfortable. And if you know what the adjustment is and you've worked on it in the cages and it's proven to work, don't be afraid to go that big within the games. And here's the last thing I say. I know I already said the last thing. In the games, if your bad habits are more likely to be greater, which they always are because the game is more sped up and there's more emotion, your adjustment and your thought for that adjustment also needs to be greater.
Yeah.
So if I'm in the cage and I am going forward at everything on my load, something I used to do, drift forward, and I'm doing that in the cage, what do you think that's going to look like in the game? I'm going to be jumping forward, like so on my front foot. So in the games, if my cage thought is, hey, stay on your back leg. In the game, my thought is fall through the backstop. And it had to be like that for me.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this could be hitter specific. But if you're struggling and you know what the adjustment is and you can't seem to make it bigger. Take the same thought and multiply it by 10. And if that's not big enough, do it by 20. And just keep going until you feel so uncomfortable that something different has to happen. And then it does. And then you're good. That's my piece on adjustments. I'll go for hours if you let me. So let's move it on. Okay, so now.
Moving on. What's the funniest thing you've ever done to get out of a slump?
I'm going to let you go first. What's the funniest thing you've ever done to get out of a slump?
Well, this is kind of sad. So my senior year at A&M, I had torn my meniscus earlier in the season. And we didn't know that. I didn't get an MRI until the season was over because I was not about to have someone tell me I had some injury that I couldn't come back from and that I had to sit out. That was not happening.
No shot.
So I was just in a brace all season. And I didn't notice it. Like and we talked about this in one of our episodes. My first couple weekends, my senior year.
Insane.
I like led the NCAA, I think, in RBI and home runs. Or I was tied with first.
It was nuts.
It was ridiculous.
Your first like two games, you had three homers.
I went 5 for 6, three homers, two doubles.
Yeah.
One fly out to this. Like, I literally couldn't miss. And it was one of those, like, weird things where it never happens ever except for once in your life.
Yeah.
Anyways, I was doing really well. I tore my meniscus, like, second week of SEC, I think. And my swing just over time started to... It was my right knee, so it was my turn leg. Mm. And I didn't notice it because it was little by little. I just started getting weaker and weaker and weaker in that leg. And so I started... My axis of rotation started to be more and more...
Tilted upward.
And I look back now, like, even on some of the highlight reels, and I'm like, oh my gosh, mm-hmm. that was bad. Mm-hmm. Anyways, besides that. So, I was under everything and I was late at everything.
Rise balls were not fun
for Rise you. Balls were actually, like, I remember one time we were playing Alabama, and Montana Fouts was a freshman, and we were in game 3, and they were undefeated the whole season. They were like 26-0, something ridiculous. And we had a runner on second, two outs, and I was friends with the catcher. Her name is Reagan Dykes. I was friends with the catcher. And I was, like, getting in, like, my zone. I was, like, getting all angry. Like, I'm going to hit this game-winning RBI. This is the bottom of the seventh. And they intentionally walked me. And I was like, honestly, had they just thrown me 3 strikes right down the middle, I probably would have struck out. And then the girl hitting behind me, Peyton McBride, hit a game-winning single.
That was awesome.
And that was their first loss of the season. But in my head, I'm like, thank God.
Yeah.
Because I probably would have struck out. She was throwing like 74, something ridiculous.
Why do you think that they did that? Who's the head coach over there?
Pat Murphy. I think it was
strategic.
The next person up was a lefty.
Yeah.
She was a great hitter. Her batting average was probably higher than mine. I think it was just a force out kind of situation. They're trying to get a force out somewhere. But anyways,
and a little bit of respect.
Maybe, I don't know. It was
because I think even like a coach like Pat Murphy, like, he knows you, and even in a down year, but it's like, hey, I've seen her. And she is the senior. She's the captain on this team.
He didn't want me to have my moment.
No, it's not that. I think he knows that if there's somebody in this moment, no matter what their season has looked like, that could do something to win this game, it's probably you.
Maybe.
And I think that he would probably say that.
Well, I dodged a bullet with that one.
Shout out, Pat.
Shout out, Pat.
Thanks, Pat.
But I remember thinking, I was just so weak. And they gave me, this is so embarrassing. So in college softball, the maximum drop you're allowed to swing is a drop 8. So the longest bat you can have is 34. Largest drop you can have is a drop 8. In practice, I would swing a 34 drop 8. In games, I swung a 34 drop 9.
Drop 9.
I was swinging towards the end of season a 31 drop 10.
What?
Just to try to get, like, any kind of contact whatsoever.
Wow.
And again, like, it was lack of knowledge on my part of understanding my swing. Had I just fixed my tilt, I would have been totally fine. Yeah, because
you were probably, from being uphill, super long and disconnected.
Late and underneath. Yeah. Right? It's like a total typical sign of being, posture turned too far down.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, this is the most embarrassing thing ever. So that's what I tried. It didn't work, but that's what I tried. Kind of sad.
That's not that embarrassing. That's sad. I thought you were going to say something like crazy, like...
I mean, you change your superstition sometimes, but, like, nothing crazy.
I've kind of already touched on this in the superstition video, but,
what's,
like,
your weirdest?
You know, I was changing my food routines because, like, I was a very big food superstition guy. So I was like, my 2 chocolate chip cookies from Subway aren't doing it. I'm going to Potbelly.
Clearly, it's Subway's fault.
I'm going to Potbelly.
They have good cookies, too.
God, my craziest thing to get out of a slump. It depends what slump, like... I never really did anything outrageous in college.
Lame.
And, like, I had shorter slumps in college because I was better about my confidence.
Metal bats probably make it easier too.
Yeah, but I also think, like, back to what we talked about at the beginning, in college, anytime I was in a slump, it was because I was expanding. And so, like, I knew that about myself. And so when I started slumping, I would just kind of tighten things up a little bit. So I didn't need, like, some crazy superstition to help me out, but... In pro ball, there wasn't anything I don't think that could have made me hit better in pro ball. It was rough. God, what are some
crazy things?
I mean, I Well, okay, here's kind of like the biggest, it was a swing change, mm-hmm. but it was a total shot in the dark. It wasn't like a strategic, I've been working on this swing yeah. change. I was hitting so bad in pro ball, and my first year I get drafted and I go to short season after getting drafted, which is like not a big deal. It's still single A. It's still mm-hmm. like the one of the lowest levels of single A, but it's not rookie ball. And so if you're a new draft guy and you get sent to short season, which no longer exists anymore, it feels like a little bit of a win. It's like, okay, yeah. they're not going to leave me here in rookie ball to like figure it out with all the younger guys, maybe some high school guys. Like they see promise in me and I'm going. So I'm on my way. And I sucked. I did horrible. It's awful.
That's not true. The first weekend I went up there, you hit a bomb.
Okay. I got off to an okay start, but when did you come up though? I don't feel like you came up until yeah. I got drafted in June. Yeah, you were there in July. Yeah. Or maybe, yeah. Well, that was after a month of suckage.
No, I was there. It was like one of the first weekends home.
Okay. Well, whatever. Anyways, so I got sent to short season. I played my whole first season in short season. It was only like a short season because that's after it starts in June.
Clever.
But then my following year, my first full pro season, I started in short season again. Same place that I was all last year. On year two, going back to short season is not what you want. That was bad.
But a lot of your draft class did.
There's a few of us. There, like, I would say 25% of us, unless they were like Dominican guys or high school guys that were there last year and just needed another year. But anyways, I went back to short season, and I kind of saw that coming. I was like, I wouldn't move me up either. I just hit 180, you know. It was I hit 200, like, on the dot that first season. But anyways, so I go back to short season, and this is where things get rough, and I'm struggling again. And so they move me from short season back to rookie ball. So this is season two of pro ball, and I'm being demoted.
Yeah.
From pretty much the lowest of
this
the low.
This was the same time of my story just now, too.
Yeah, it was tough. It was tough times.
This was the same time.
It was tough times.
I was swinging a 31 drop 10.
All we had was each other during these times. I went from the like so almost bad. The lowest of the low back to like, hey, we're going to go put you back with like the 17-year-old Dominican mm-hmm. guys and high schoolers who are learning I'm not going to say the most basic things because pro ball is not basic anyways.
Yeah.
And these guys, I'll be honest, at this time, like these guys were better than me. They were out hitting me. And so like very humbling moment. I am at the lowest of the lowest levels that you could be at in my second year of pro ball, and there's 17-year-old Dominicans who are ripping the cover off the ball while I'm continuing to strike out at everything. And
but
so
one of them was Lawrence Butler.
Oh, Lawrence? No, Lawrence.
He was out.
Lawrence Law was first year rookie ball because he came out of high school, so I'm pretty sure he played his whole entire first season when I was in short season. He just did rookie ball, and then the second year. Anyways, so he was in short season the second year. Okay. So I did play with him there. But anyways, that was when I was like so down in the dumps about I had been slumping for God knows how long. I mean, at this point I maybe had four hits on the season in both
years
short season
worth of
and it was horrible. So I think they really just took me back to rookie ball so I could get out of my head and just like hit better. But the problem with me was I was a swinger. I would swing at everything. And so like you go, the lower you go in levels, it's like guys still throw hard mm-hmm. and they still have a ton of movement, but they have way less control.
Yeah.
And so me being the free swinger I was, that was probably the worst thing. And I'm not, obviously I would never expect the A's to do this, but like they would have been better off putting me in AAA
yeah.
than putting me back in rookie ball.
Well, you went to Beloit at one point.
I went to Beloit for a very short amount of time, for a month. And that's actually when I started to like
do well.
I started to slowly, but towards the end of that month, because the beginning of the month was literally like 30 degrees every time we played. It was April in Beloit, and it was horrible. Mm-hmm. But towards the end of that month, like I started to kind of get things together. I was having better at bats, all these things, whatever. But back to my point, the weirdest thing I ever did, my swing, I had lost it at that point, and it was still mechanically the same swing I took in college. Mm-hmm. But the feel for it, I was like, I don't know what's happening. Obviously, I'm sucking it up. I'm going to do something dramatic. And so what I did was I thought of the swaggiest player that I could ever imagine. I was like, I have to find a way out of my head. And Robinson Cano was my guy. Mm-hmm. When I grew up playing wiffle ball in the street with my buddies, I would emulate Robinson Cano. And so I'm like, you know what? just to get out of my head, to get out of the slump, to feel something different, I'm going to go for just my wiffle ball swing from when I was 10. Robinson Cano, let's do it.
Boom.
And I started doing it. I started feeling better. I started having some flow and just relaxed again because I was literally just like, I can't hit. And I started hitting again. And that's probably the craziest thing I ever did, was just like go to a swing that I'd never practiced before outside of a wiffle ball when I was 10 years old. And it just goes to prove that, like, if you just stay athletic and stay free and loose with hitting especially, you'll find a way. It's the moment that we start pressing and getting tense. It doesn't matter how sick your swing is in the cages. Like, it's just, you have to stay loose in there. And so that's what it did. I was like, you know what? I'm just going to go for the loosest, most flowy swing I can think of. And it worked for a little bit, and then I got cut. But I kept that Robinson Cano swing.
Neither adjustment worked for you.
I kept that swing going after I got cut. I was like, this swing is sick. This is the best I felt in probably 2 years. And it wasn't from a hitting coach. It wasn't from drills. It was just me saying, screw it, basically. I had to get out of my head. So I had to try something dramatic.
And then he came
physically
to our wedding.
And then Robbie Cano came to our wedding. That was kind of cool. Yeah. So, yeah, totally different swing. Pretty much just said, screw it. I'm just going to have fun. Because you only get this opportunity once.
That's true.
But yeah, that was kind of wild. So, slumps, not fun. Everybody has them.
Slumpage.
What are you going to do? Get out of your head. Go be athletic. And remember why you play the game. Have fun. I know it's hard when you're slumping, but just like the best thing you can do is seriously make adjustments as good as you can, but get out of your head and go have fun again. Because nobody's having fun when you're having a slump. I know it. So that's my story on slumps.
It's a good story.
Well, it's late and we should probably go to bed. But we're probably going to stay up and film another episode because the fans love it. We got 5 views on our last podcast episode. Let's go. Keep tuning in. We'll do it weekly. Get out of your head. Get out of your slump. Good night. Bye.